Don't tell me you what? 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 Don't tell me you love me.
The way you move, it ain't the way that you move me. Oh no. I have the unmistakable voice of the great Jack Blades, the band, of course, Night Ranger. And this is the All 80s Rock and Talk Podcast. I am Shane Christopher Neal. Thanks for hanging out today and all the days that you hung out with us in the past. It is the holiday season, and Michael Hansen is off on some island, I'm pretty sure. Either that or he's not messaging me back. I don't know. It could be either one. And the great Bobby R. Rock is probably, tobogganing down some hill in Ontario, Canada. So I thought I would do this. It is the holidays. And by the way, we do want to wish you a very happy holiday season here at the All 80s Rock and Talk Podcast. But I sat down a couple of weeks ago with the great Jack Blades from Night Ranger. And I did the interview for a radio show I have on Classic 1220 AM radio in Southern Ontario. And actually coming in January, because I caught up with Kelly Keggy not that long ago, I'm actually going to put a Night Ranger show together. It's going to be really cool. But right now, today, I thought for the holidays, because we wanted to put out a podcast before the end of 2023, I would play the Jack Blades interview that I did a couple of weeks ago. The band just put out 40 years and A Night with Contemporary Youth Orchestra, came out in October 2023. A great live album. And they did it with this orchestra out of Cleveland, Ohio, of all places. You'll get that story. And by the way, Night Ranger, just so you know, did not have a number one hit. I know, crazy, right? They got so many great songs. But Sister Christian went to number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100. Sentimental Street to number 7. And I did ask, by the way, Jack Blades how he feels about Kelly Keggy singing the band's top 2 songs on Billboard. But anyway, we'll get to that. It's a great conversation. I do hope you love it. It is with Jack Blades. The band is Night Ranger. This 4680Q. Merry Christmas, my friend. Happy holidays.
Dance mode countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, this is Jack Blades from Night Ranger. And that's right, you're listening to who? Shane Christopher Neal. Keep it up, dude.
Turn it on. Turn it up. Turn it up.
All right, Classic 1220, Rock and Rewind, Shane Christopher Neal. On the phone right now, my very good friend, because we spoke for 30 seconds before this, Mr. Jack Blades from Night Ranger. How you doing?
Very good, Shane. That was a good way to put it. I like that, because we've had 30 seconds before.
That's right.
Close personal friend. Yeah, I like it. It's great, man. Good to talk to all you guys in Canada, man.
We love you here in Canada. Now, you have a connection to Canada. Your mom was from Canada, right?
My mom, that's right. She was born in, where was she born? Oh, in Saskatchewan.
Oh, Saskatchewan. There you go. Okay, very nice.
I think she was born near Regina, which rhymes with
yes,
China, I guess. Wait a minute.
You know, I have a beef, though, with you guys. I'm going to tell you what it is. And I told Kelly this when I did an interview with him a couple years ago. Night Ranger did not play Canada nearly enough. And I don't know why. But I just found that I'm 54 years old. I'm growing up through the 80s, the 90s, and there is very little Night Ranger here, at least in the province of Ontario. Was there a reason for that?
No, you know, I agree with you. I don't know why that happened, you know? I mean, we have so much success all over the world and everything like that, and it's a shame that we didn't play that much in Canada. I mean, we did some shows, we did some tours, not a lot. I mean, we did a tour, 10 years ago with Journey and Loverboy and us, and we had a great time doing that. That was a wonderful time, and I don't know why we haven't been there since then. So I'm going to have to look into that for you, Shane. I'll figure that out.
You talk to your people. They'll get back to my people. We'll make a huge announcement. It'll be gold. I mentioned that I talked to Kelly. So what happened was ATBPO came out in 2021. I know you already know that. I'm not telling you because you didn't know. But I did the interview with Kelly right after that. And you, my friend, made a comment some years back saying that Kelly was one of the top five best singing drummers on the planet. And he told me he was going to compensate you for that. Has he ever stepped up to the table?
Over the years, believe me, Kelly stepped up to the table big time over and over and over and over again. I don't have to worry about that. But yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, you have no idea how hard that is to do. I mean, to sing and play drums at the same time, and to play drums at the level that he plays drums, the way he kicks ass. You know what I mean? I mean, it's hard enough to sing, but you're up there physically banging on drums. You're rocking and rolling. I don't know how he's done it for the last 40 years, but he's just, to me, it's the most amazing thing on the planet.
Well, I want to echo that because I have been a drummer for many years of my life, and I've said to Kelly, I struggle singing back up, and let alone singing the tunes that he sings. Does it bother you at all that the two, I guess, top hits that Night Ranger had, you've had a number, but Sister Christian goes to number 5, I think Sentimental Street at number 7, that he sings both of those? Does that matter?
No, it doesn't really matter. You know, I mean, it's like when we were in Night Ranger, it's just certain songs fit certain, you know, like certain songs fit me really well.
Right.
And songs fit Kelly really well. And so we just kind of went with that. And it was kind of like, I don't know, not really a formula and stuff like that, but it just kind of worked out well. Plus, which I sang High Enough, which is the number one record, at, you know, with Damn Yankees.
Right.
I sang that ballad. So, I believe me, I got my shot of ballads.
Oh,
so
very, very nice.
I'm fine with that.
I was surprised, actually, that Sister Christian never did make it to number one, but that's another story. So let's talk about what's happening now. 40 Years and a Night with Contemporary Youth Orchestra came out October 20th via Frontiers. It was recorded in Cleveland. So how do you reflect back on 40 years of Night Ranger when you really think about it? Because I know me as a fan, and I mean, I was a huge fan. I owned Dawn Patrol, Midnight Madness, Seven Wishes, and a few other albums into the deep 2000s. But how do you reflect back now if you just sit there, have a cup of coffee and think, wow, what a journey this has been?
Yeah, right. It's like the Rolling the Grateful Dead. What a long, strange trip it's been.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been an amazing run. You know what I mean? Here we are. You know, look, let's put it to you this way. When you start out a band, you figure it's going to last maybe 4 or 5 years. You'll meet some girls. Everything will be great. That'll be that. You know what I mean? But here we are talking about a new album that just came out. We're touring all over the U.S., all over the world. I mean, shows are selling out. And we're, you know, it's 2023. It's like 40 years later.
Right.
I mean, it's just amazing the time has gone by. And that I think it's all about the songs. We have songs that have stood the test of time. I mean, whether it be Sister Christian, Rockin' America, Don't Tell Me You Love Me, When You Close Your Eyes, Goodbye, 4 in the Morning. I mean, we just have songs, Sentimental Street. You know, they're just songs that have transcended. And right. I think that when you have good songs and you got a good band that still wants to kick ass and not just get up there and, like, turn one in. Because Night Ranger, when we get up on stage, man, we give 110%. We give everything we have inside of us. I mean, we leave everything. It's like a football game, man. We leave everything on the field. And that's what we do every single night when we play.
What I love about your band, too, it's a very visual band. And, of course, coming up through the 80s, 82, 83, 85, that period especially, you have much music coming into play. You have much here in Canada. You got MTV in the States, right? So just talk a little bit about how that impacted the band, because I do a lot of interviews with, we'll call, you know, classic rock artists that all lived through those decades. And it was monumental that people could put a visual to the recording, right?
Oh, I think it was amazing. I mean, we cut our first album, the Dawn Patrol record, and then I had my buddies that went to UCLA. They went to UCLA film school, and they checked out all the gear to make our first video, the Don't Tell Me You Love Me video on the railroad tracks and everything like that. And we did it ghetto style. I mean, we did a total guerrilla style too. I mean, we just jumped in and filmed in places until they chased us out. You know what I mean? And it was like that kind of thing. You know what I mean? It was like hit and miss. It was totally guerrilla. And so we filmed this video and we gave it to MTV, and MTV was this brand new thing that was just starting out in, like, you know, the end of 1982. And, you know, I think they maybe had like 6 videos or 8 videos, you know, so they started. So we gave them our video, and they probably had Hungry Like a Wolf by Duran
right.
Duran and
I think
one
so.
Other video or something. And they started playing our video. We gave it to them. They started playing it like 14 times a day. And here's this brand new thing that everybody's digging on. And so every kid's watching it on TV. And suddenly we go out on tour with Sammy Hagar back at the beginning of 1983. And suddenly, like, we'd walk into a town and people knew who we were and they'd seen our faces. We were like TV stars. I mean, it's the craziest thing, because originally, you know, all you had to do was be a musician to play your guitar. Then you got to write your own music and play and sing. And now it's like, okay, now you got to be an actor. Now you got to like act on video.
Right.
And stuff
yeah.
like that. I mean, it's like all these things just piled up. But for us, MTV just blasted Night Ranger and just basically, I mean, we were at the right place at the right time. It put us on the map because of the Don't Tell Me You Love Me track and everything in the band. And then we toured nonstop for, like, you know, we do like 18 month tours and stuff like that for the first 3-4 years of the band, right up through the Seven Wishes album, the third album. And so I think that really, you know, that combined with our work ethic just really put Night Ranger on the map.
And it's funny, I mentioned that. So I'm 54. And so growing up through the 80s and in that, songs like Sentimental Street, like, I remember the girl that I was in love with when that was out, and that I would be, you know, Sister Christian, like all of these songs, Don't Tell Me You Love Me. And it just brings you back to so many great memories. And you guys have created that for myself, and I'm sure so many others. This album I want to talk to you about here. You have a choir not a choir, but an orchestra that's joined you on it. And these are like 12 to 18 year old kids, I believe, right? So what do they know about Night Ranger? Yeah. Let's start with that. And how did this all kind of come about? Whose idea was it? Obviously, you had rehearsals getting ready for this whole thing.
Well, what we wanted to do was do something special for, you know, to celebrate our 40th anniversary and everything like that. And we thought, well, hey, man, why don't we do a record with a symphony orchestra? Because we saw the Metallica with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra.
Yep.
I saw Styx. And I saw Tommy, my buddy Tommy, and Styx do it with this contemporary youth orchestra out of Cleveland. And I said, well, why don't we do the same thing with them? Why don't we use them and see what it's like? And they'd done several. They'd done it with several other artists. I think Pat Benatar. I think they did it with several other artists. And so we're like, wow, well, let's check it out. So we kind of put it all together. And I'm telling you, man, it was a fine balancing act, because here's the interesting thing, Shane. We wanted to make sure that it was a symphony playing with a rock band, not a rock band trying to play to a symphony.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's
it really hard, because we're still a rock band. We still wanted to come across a rock band. And the easiest thing for us to do would be to just to like let our music just let's just really make the band really, you know, insignificant and let the symphony, you know, overtake the entire thing. But then it'd end up just like, you know, Night Ranger Muzak or something like that.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean?
But here we are. You know, we have strings, we have horns, we have flugelhorns. Shit, I don't even know what a flugelhorn is, but we had them. So, you know, we had stuff like that, and we're like putting all this stuff on it. So we did this fine balancing act. It's still a kick-ass rock show, but it's with a 80-piece symphony orchestra. And I think when people hear the record and when they see the concert footage and everything like that, because it was out on Access TV in the States here, it's on Blu-ray and DVD and everything like that, I mean, when they see it, they'll understand what I'm talking about. I think we threaded that needle really well and made it all work out to where this is still a kick-ass rock band, you know, with a 80-piece symphony orchestra just augmenting the killer Night Ranger sounds and songs.
Were you nervous going out there to play it? I mean, because, you know, you have your band and you know you're not going to screw up if you're playing a show. You might, but anyway, but when you're playing with some brand new, you know, this many youths, were you kind of worried at all that, you know, if something goes south, what are we going to do about this? Because this is not something you do or probably rehearse a lot.
Yeah, you know what? we rehearsed with him for about three or four times before, before the show, 3 or 4 days. And we just told all those, all the kids, all the youth, just like, look, man, have fun. Mm-hmm. You guys know how to play it. You know these songs now. You know your parts. You've got the music in front of you. You've got a wonderful conductor and Christopher Moran up there. Your maestro is just conducting perfectly. Everything's great. And you guys, let's just have fun. Don't worry about anything else. Just get up there and have a blast. And I think one time during the show, I stopped and I said, stop. Wait a minute. We're going to film this again. This is what you can do when you're filming. You're able to stop it when you're recording.
Right.
It's like, stop. Okay. And the audience, like, loved it. I'm telling you, the audience was, they were more excited when we stopped and then started up again than they were when we were first playing. Because it was like, now they're part of us.
Right.
They're part of the show. They're part of everything. And it just turned out great. I mean, we just did that one time on one song. We had to stop it for some, I think it was the song Night Ranger. But, you know, it was just great. Like, I brought everybody in. I let the kids know it's okay. The audience was okay. Everybody. And it just made we were all in it together. And that just made for a wonderful, wonderful night of rock and roll and a wonderful recording experience and a wonderful video experience. It just turned out great. It couldn't have worked out better.
Yeah, and I saw the videos and they were amazing. The ones that were sent to me, and they're on YouTube as well now. And I was going to ask you why Cleveland, but you did answer that question. I thought it was because Drew Carey said Cleveland rocked, or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was there or something. I don't know. But there you have it. You got a good lead on a good orchestra. Okay, so another question for you, I got a little story for you. Back in the early 90s, I was at Kingswood Music Theater in Toronto, Ontario, just north of Toronto, at Canada's Wonderland. I had front row tickets to this show. I had bought this album. I thought it was amazing. And you, my friend, were right at the front of the stage in front of me. And you said these exact words. I have a great memory, despite the fact I drink a lot. You had said to the crowd, you're never going to hear this song as great as you're going to hear it right now. And that was a damn Yankee show. And it was High Enough. And not that you remember that. Maybe you say that to everybody when you sing it. But is there any update, I guess, on what might happen with Damn Yankees? I know a lot of people probably ask about a reunion of some sorts. I know people are busy, but I know Michael's not going to be working because, you know, his band is going bye-bye.
Did I really say that? I've never.
Yes.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I was kidding. I guess I got a little bit of a Ted Nugent bravado inside me on that one, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I remember it, though.
Hey, I must have been channeling the Nuge. I think I was channeling the Nuge at that time or something like that. But, wow, you know, that's wild. I mean, the Damn Yankees, I think it'd be fun if we ever got together again. But who knows? I mean, Tommy Shaw is always so busy with sticks.
Right.
I mean, I don't think they ever let him. I don't think he can even breathe. You know what I mean? I mean, they're working constantly and stuff like that. Ted came in and sat in with Night Ranger about a month and a half ago when we played up in Michigan. And, I mean, the place came in glue. I mean, 5,000 people just freaked out. We did a Damn Yankee song. We did Coming of Age. And then we did we do High Enough? I think we did Coming of Age and High Enough. And we did Cat Scratch Fever. And it was just... We killed it.
Very nice.
What did I say in Toronto? What did I say up there in Ontario? What did I say?
You said something along the lines of, you'll never hear this song as great as you're going to hear it right now. And you kind of captured the audience because they were like, wow. And then you got into High Enough. And I just remember it. It stuck with me. I was in my early 20s.
How was it?
What's that?
How was it?
It was amazing. It was great.
Did it come through that way? Oh, good.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you did anything wrong by it. I thought it was great. Oh, and I was kind of like, wow, this is exciting. And I had never heard, and I mentioned I'm a drummer. And at the time before Damn Yankees, I never heard of Michael playing drums, you know, now, of course, with Leonard Skinner and goes on and on. But back then I had all these, you know, rock stars and I had Michael on drums. I'm like, who the heck's this guy? But man, he nailed that too. Yeah, but I was just curious to know. You mentioned Tommy Shaw. Any other Shaw Blades stuff coming out, or is that not going to happen either because of the schedule?
So fun with Shaw Blades. I mean, I'd love to do more with Shaw Blades, but we haven't even approached it. Something. Actually, there's like a half of an album already recorded of new Shaw Blades stuff. So maybe we should finish that up sometime. It wouldn't take too much to finish it up. You know, I think that'd be great. You know, and Michael with Damn Yankees, I'll tell you what, man, he was, when we first put the band together, it was Tommy, Ted, and I, and Tommy said, I know this guy named Michael Carlone, he's in New York here, and and we could just use him as a drummer just while we're rehearsing and stuff like that. I used him on a couple of solo things. He was pretty good, and so we could check him out. And so we started rehearsing with Michael, and then when the record deal went down and everything came down, we just kind of looked around and went, well, he's really good. Why even look?
Right.
I mean, we're fine with Michael. And so that's where Michael came from. He was like from nowhere. I think he was painting houses or something like that, you know, at that time, you know, and doing pickup work and stuff like that. So anyway, he's just such a great drummer, and a wonderful human being too. And a wonderful artist, by the way, a painter.
I had heard that. And it's funny. This summer I was in Toronto at Budweiser Stage and I saw, Lynyrd Skynyrd play their last show here. And man, he just blew me away on the drums. I mean, I knew he was always a good drummer, but I could see over the decades how great he really became as a drummer. I got two other questions. I know that you don't have a lot of time, but, my most underrated Night Ranger song is Secret of My Success. I love it. I love the melody. I just love the song. Of course, produced by David Foster. Do you have an underrated song or album that stands out to you from the band?
A underrated song. I think one of my, I don't know. I mean, I love When You Close Your Eyes. I mean, that's always been one of my favorite Night Ranger songs of all time. You know, I mean, I love that. But I think a song that's really a great song is on our very first album. We had a song called Call My Name. And I really love that song. It's a kind of a ballad and it kicks in through the solo, kicks into a big rock thing and everything like that. It's pretty grandiose and everything like that. And that's why we chose to do that on this symphony record.
Yeah, I see that.
And because it's not, you know, it's not one of those ones that everyone would instantly recognize, you know what I mean? It's not one of the big hits and everything like that, but it just, and it translated and lent itself so perfectly to have a symphony play behind it. And it just turned out, actually on the record, that turned out to be one of my favorite songs on the 40 Years and a Night with the Contemporary Youth Orchestra, the song Call My Name, so.
Very nice. I love live albums, and I wanted to tell you this too, that I own Live in Japan, 1990, came out on MCA Records. I had read somewhere that this album came out, but Night Ranger was not aware it came out. I don't know where I read. Is that true? Or like the record label just kind of put it out? Or was this something that was planned? I don't know where I read it, and this was many years ago.
I think you're probably right about that. I mean, in 1990, I was in the midst of selling out arenas and places with Damn Yankees.
Right.
And so all of a sudden they dropped that. And it's like the band wasn't even performing. I mean, there wasn't even a band Night Ranger in 1990.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and suddenly they just dropped that. And someone told me that. It's like, hey, you got a new record out. I'm like, well, with Damn Yankees. Yeah, we're working. No. No, you got a new Night Ranger record. I'm like, I do. Surprise!
See, so the story is right. I thought that's what I heard or read.
Yeah, I think they were just taking advantage of, they were jumping on the bandwagon because the Damn Yankees stuff was blowing up so big and everything
right, like
that. And they just jumped on the bandwagon with that. So, but anyway, that worked out well.
Yeah, sure did. I own it right now. Actually, I play it on the 1220 radio show that I do. There's some great tracks off there that sound amazing live. So I do that. We won't get into this, but you know, you're a great songwriter. If you work with Aerosmith, Cher, Ozzy, producer, I can't believe you produced or co-produced Samantha Seven. I'm a huge CC DeVille and Poison fan. So that's interesting.
Just played a couple days ago with Brett. We did a show with Brett.
Oh, very nice.
Amphitheater in St. Augustine, Florida. Yeah, and we did all summer long with Brett Michaels and the Party Gras tour. That was a great summer tour this past year. Oh, it was so much fun and everything like that. Yeah, I did a lot of producing. I produced the Ted Nugent record. I produced a Great White record. I did Samantha Seven with CeCe. CeCe lived at my house for 2 or 3 months. That was an experience.
I bet you what. Did he have purple hair at the time, or was he okay?
Ow! I think CeCe and Sam Kennison are the same people.
That's hilarious. I have a deep love for Poison. For 2 years, played drums in a Poison tribute band, so that just shows you how much my love for that band is. So that's really awesome.
Well, don't tell me you love me!
Don't tell me you love me, baby. Don't tell me you love me, baby. Don't tell me you love me. Don't tell me you love me, baby. We'll be right back.
Maestro Christopher Rea. Yeah.